to order at 5:15. All members are present except for Senator Calgary, unless he's online. So we have three bills before us today. And the first bill that's going to be presented is 149, use of used eyeglasses. Are you going to be the presenter?
Yes, Madam Chairman.
You want to state your name for the record?
My name is David Stancliff. I work for Senator Gene Cario. And the bill before you was requested by the Lions of Alaska, who for years have provided eyeglasses to third world countries, used eyeglasses in particular for people who haven't got the resources or the means perhaps to avail themselves to some of the more expensive eyewear that we're used to having. The bill as originally written referenced a board that no longer existed. The drafter apologized profusely and a CS was adopted in the previous committee, and that is the document before you. And the references to board have been taken out, department has been put in, and the repealers and cleanup for that section of statute is at the end of the CS. The other changes that were made had to do with a suggestion that an optometrist made saying there will be times when the Lions Club will not be able to get the exact prescription needed for a person for used eyeglasses, and so there was some language added on page 2 on lines 24 and 25 that said to the extent possible, that gives a little bit of wiggle room for people who need glasses but perhaps can't get exactly the prescription that they're requiring. The Lions Club is on record as supporting this bill. It does not require that the department work with the Lions Club. It merely opens the door, and this is an enabling piece of legislation, and it says quite clearly that that any nonprofit, because you can't spell out the Lions Club per se, that is deemed qualified may begin an association with the state of Alaska in which they may come to an agreement to be able to provide used eyeglasses. They have great experience in this in the third world, but when they looked into providing it for people in rural Alaska or other places in Alaska where people can't afford the eyeglasses, they were told that a change in statute would make it clearer and probably is necessary to form that type of relationship. And that, Madam Chairman, in a nutshell, is what Senate Bill 149 is all about.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to say to my committee that this bill was heard first in Labor and Commerce, and they did have great testimony. And I don't know if there's anybody signed up to testify over here. I don't have a list in front of me. Is anybody in the audience to testify on this bill? Yes. Anybody online? Okay, we have Howard Ricky Sr. Fairbanks, you want to testify?
Yes, ma'am, given the opportunity.
Yes, you may. Give your name for the record.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Howard Scott Rixby. I'm associated with the Aurora Borealis Lions Eyeglass Recycling Center. And first off, I want to thank your committee for hearing Senate Bill 149. We look forward to the time when all Alaskans can enjoy the gift of sight. We urge your committee to pass Senate Bill 149 on and move it forward to the full Senate. It's a good bill for all Alaskans in need. Last week, I sent each of your committee members and yourself, ma'am,
yes,
electronic letter and some attachments, and I would ask if you have a copy of those to enter into your committee's record on my behalf. And again, I just want to thank you for your support, and I hope it moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Oh, is there any question from Mr. Rigby? Here are no questions.
Sure.
Yes, I'm sorry. Senator Elton?
Just one question, and perhaps for Mr. Stancliff. And you'll be able to tell from the question I am not a medical professional. But, I mean, when somebody shows up at other doctor's offices, for example, I mean, there is a credo that person should be treated regardless of their ability to pay. Does that apply to does that apply to the two different optometrists and ophthalmologists also?
Madam Chair, I have checked with Jill Gearing down here at the Alaska Vision Center, and they do a fair amount of that type of, I guess we could call it charitable or benevolent type work. But of course, in Alaska, as you know, Senator Elton, there are lots of places where you can't get to either one of those types of centers of care, and that's where the Lions can really step in and help.
So Madam Chair, if I could.
Yes, ma'am.
So when I was under, I guess I was kind of under the impression that the dispensing doctor would be the one that would dispense also the Lion's eyeglasses, but those eyeglasses don't have to be dispensed by a licensed doctor, optometrist or ophthalmologist?
Through the chair, that would be correct. If the state deems that the Lions have the experience necessary to be able to take a prescription that does have to be under this bill given for the proper eye care and fill that prescription and fit that person with glasses, then the Lions will be in business in Alaska to do that with used eyeglasses. Not to say that an optometrist or ophthalmologist today doesn't and can't do that. This would just expand that for this benevolent group to do for Alaskans what they're doing now for third world countries. They have a great deal of experience in it.
But they couldn't do that if the patient didn't have a prescription.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, that's a good question. They did clear that up in the last committee. Is there anyone else to testify on this bill? Are there any questions from any members? Yes, Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just want, was that page 2, lines 22 through 25 that you were just clarifying there? Is that the area that I don't want to?
Was.
Madam Chair, the language that was added in the previous, in the CS before you, in the other previous committee, was found on line 24 and line 25, and the words exactly are that were added in were "to the extent possible," because you're not going to always have used glasses that fit perfectly that prescription the person has. But once again, the department is going to have to build into regulation and policy the guidelines for the Lions to operate under. They're not going to have carte blanche authority or ability to judge what's close enough. That has to be worked out.
Thank you.
Makes sense. Are there any other questions? And we are working off a CS Senate Bill number 149K.
Have we adopted it?
And we do need to adopt that.
I would move, Madam Chairman, that we adopt CS for Senate Bill 149 version / K.
Any objection? So move, then we will accept this as a working document for us. Actually, I don't have any other comments to make on the bill. I think it's straightforward and pretty much has been worked through in another committee. It's just an idea that we need to make sure that we as a HES committee feel that this is a good thing for the constituents, and I do feel that it is, and I hope that the rest of us feel that way. It would be my intention not to hear this bill again and move it out of committee today to the next committee of referral, and I guess that would end up being rules because it only had two committee assignments.
I would be inclined to make a motion, if you would accept, to move the committee substitute for Senate Bill 149 / K out of committee with the individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
It has been moved that we move the Spurgeon K out of the committee, individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Are there any objections? Hearing none, then so this bill is moved.
Thank you, Madam.
Thank you very much. The next bill we have from us is SCR 19. Would you come forward, please? Senator Wilkoski and staff member
Michelle Seideman.
Yes. Okay, we'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Bill Wilkoski. I'm the senator for Northeast Anchorage. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today very briefly about this resolution. This is a concurrent resolution which we're asking to examine implementing the recommendations of the Governor's Summit on Early Learning. As you may recall from your Best Beginnings presentation last Friday, Alaska was one of 10 states that achieved, was awarded a grant in 2007 from the National Governors Association to hold a summit on early learning. There were 150 policymakers statewide, including some legislators who participated in the summit, which took place in December. And one of the primary goals of summit participants was to ensure that Alaska's future economy will be supported by an educated, productive workforce. To that end, the participants drafted a number of recommendations to ensure that all children, especially those most in need, have access to quality early education opportunities. For years, the research has demonstrated that certain workforce skills are taught most effectively and efficiently to children under 6. And we've also found that critical brain development also occurs most rapidly in the early years from birth to age 6. In this regard, Alaska appears to be shortchanging our youngest learners, and as a result, unfortunately, our children are lagging. Recent studies indicate that nearly half of our children have entered school unprepared to be successful learners. They're falling behind in several key areas such as early language and literacy development, thinking and cognitive development, and the development of basic social skills. Experts attribute this in large part to the lack of preschool education available in Alaska. Alaska is one of only 10 states without a state-funded statewide early childhood system. Nationally, the trend is towards voluntary pre-K for all children. And study after study document the benefits of quality preschool education. There's a document that I've included in your binders, and which you should have, which shows those findings. What you'll find is the benefits of preschool ed are higher achievement test scores, significantly less grade repetition, major reductions in special education placements, substantially higher rates of high school graduation, dramatic increases in college attendance, substantially fewer arrests, and much less reliance on public assistance. One of the most extensive studies that's been done, and there's been quite a few studies in this area, compared the performance of children at ages 14, 15, 19, 27, and 40 of low-income children who attended preschool with those who did not. And even at age 40, the differences in performance were staggering. Former preschools had a greater rate of employment and significantly higher earnings. According to economists, these factors combined to make returns from investments in preschool far greater than those from most public economic development projects. For instance, the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis reports that for every dollar spent on early education, society reaps $16 worth of benefits. And there's a chart, in your packet, which shows the breakdown on that. Of particular interest is a page entitled Large Return on Investment, which shows the benefit to society from investment in preschool in terms of reduced spending on public assistance, education, and criminal justice, and also, interestingly, an increased collection of taxes. Fortunately, public support for early education is strong in Alaska. Roughly 9 out of 10 Alaskans, or about 87%, support state funding for early education and child care, according to a poll conducted by the McDowell Group. Interestingly, more than 3/4 feel that early learning and child care are more important to fund than support for local governments or construction of new roads and highways. And almost 2/3 feel that funding for early education is more important than funding for university of education. Nationally, support for early learning programs is growing rapidly. Last year, the governor of Illinois took steps to make his state the first in the nation to provide high-quality pre-K for every 3- and 4-year-old by 2011. Other states have been doing these types of things as well. The sponsor substitute for SCR 19 calls on Governor Palin to thoroughly consider the recommendations of the Summit on Early Education and to work closely with the legislature to implement those recommendations as appropriate. And it is our intention with this to have a further the discussion about benefits of preschool this year and hopefully come back to you with a more concrete proposal next year. And I would appreciate your support on this resolution. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you very much. And thank you for bringing this resolution before us. I'm sure this is a piece of legislation that all the members of HESC could support. Are there any questions of the sponsor of this bill? We have a couple of people sign up for testimony, but I will take, yes, Senator Thomas?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senator Wilkowski, do you have the rest of this report? This looks like an extraction, the high scope Perry preschool study to age 40. Do you have the entire report available? I'd like to get a copy of that, so it's not a question, just to,
absolutely.
If I could get one, I'd appreciate
it. We'll get that to Senator Thomas.
Thank you.
Any other questions? We do have two people signed up. Is anybody in the audience to testify on this resolution? Okay, we have Nancy Hofer. Oh, I don't know how to pronounce your last name. Nancy, are you there?
Madam Chair, Nancy Chesister, can you hear me all right?
Would you? Yes, I do hear you very well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nancy Chesister, I'm testifying today in support of SCR number 19. I'm testifying as a private citizen and an active advocate of the Best Beginnings Initiative. I've been involved with Best Beginnings since February of 07, which was the beginning of the implementation team. At that time, I was an employee of ConocoPhillips Alaska, and I was the designated representative to Best Beginnings. Additionally, CPAI supported the program with generous contributions over the last 2 years. Since retiring from ConocoPhillips at the end of January this year, I have and will continue to be actively involved with this program. Our children are our future, and they deserve the best start in life we can give them. The Best Beginnings Initiative has brought numerous public and private providers to the table to, among other things, look to implement a quality rating and improvement system and to conduct a comprehensive public engagement campaign to inform parents, extended families, community members, and businesses about the economic and social return on investment. And I would repeat that, Madam Chair, the return on investment in the early years and what the public can do to help address these issues. I heartily encourage the passage of CSR number 19, and I'm urging Governor Palin to please consider the recommendations of the Governor's Summit on Early Learning, and to work closely with the legislature to implement these recommendations as appropriate. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions? Abby Hensley? Abby Hensley, are you there?
Yes, thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today about the Governor's Summit on Early Learning and the resolution before you. I am the Executive Director of Best Beginnings. Our thanks to both Senator Wilkowski for sponsoring this resolution and bringing this issue forward. More than 150 Alaskans from many sectors across the state came together at the invitation of Governor Palin to come up with recommendations that address three goals. Those goals are, first, all children, especially those most in need, have access to early literacy and learning opportunities in their homes or in out-of-home settings. Second, that these services are coordinated. And third, parents, grandparents, and extended family are engaged in young children's learning with needed support, resources, and incentives. A great deal of work went into the summit, and many partners were engaged with Best Beginnings and the Governor's Office to put it on. It is only through working together that we can ensure the future vitality of our state through investing in the early years. I applaud you for your positive consideration of this resolution and calls for cooperative efforts among all of the students. All these efforts that benefit our youngest citizens now and as they grow and learn the skilled, educated, competent workforce of tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions of Mrs. Hensley? Senator Thomas?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Ms. Hensley, did you guys have, were you on the Best Beginnings Early Learning Summit Committee? Did you take place in that process?
Yes, Senator Thomas. Actually, Best Beginnings was the, really provided the staff, the curriculum, and the
And the question, I guess, is did you have any dissenting opinion? Did people feel differently? Some group think that the recommendations that were made were not necessarily unanimous, and that some people thought that it wasn't as solidified opinion or not?
Well, because Senator Thomas, the way that the recommendations arrived at was that people were in small groups talking about specific topics and then came together and used these consensus.
Abby, could you pull your microphone up closer to your...
Oh, sorry. The groups, after they worked in small group studies, came together and provided recommendations to the whole group, and they use these consensor devices to vote on the top recommendations. So while we didn't ask for everyone to agree with every recommendation, but I think that people felt that the recommendations that sort of made the bubble to the top were recommendations that most people felt there wasn't consensus on.
So it's fair to say because of that, obviously, since you had smaller groups that met and came up with the recommendations, that you passed these out of the entire committee, and they're all pretty much the same train of thought as far as moving forward and positive situations, that that you really didn't have any dissent in general, then, I guess, is a fair statement?
I think that's fair. I think that, people will disagree on which recommendations should be more important than the others.
Sure.
But I certainly didn't hear people saying that they, were totally in disagreement with those recommendations.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Michelle Brown, United Way.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This is Michelle Brown.
You may testify.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I appreciate you having a hearing on this resolution, and thank you also, Senator Wilkowski, for bringing the issue forward. The United Way Board of Directors is comprised of 25 community and business leaders, and we very strongly endorse this resolution and the findings of the Governor's Summit on Early Learning. We have been studying this issue with a number of community partners for several years, and concur with the findings of some of the most major business organizations in the nation that early learning is necessary not just for our youth's academic success, but also for Alaska's economic success and global economy. Some of these organizations have found that states have gotten a better return on investment for early learning than much more money spent in tax incentives to encourage business relocation. As a consequence to this, our board has made this one of our major priorities, and we have invested considerable time and resources in nonprofit dollars as well as working with private sector partners in the hopes of developing a very strong public-private partnership for a comprehensive array of proven quality early learning opportunities for our families. And we want this to be a system where families can choose what kind of opportunities work best for their family, whether the child is at home or in a child care facility. And we also very strongly believe that through a coordinated plan, we can accurately measure our progress and make sure that we are making wise investments in programs that are indeed giving our children the developmental assets they need. In short, the number of children we have from age 0 to 6 makes it entirely in our grasp to give them this right start. And when we do that, we avoid major, major other social costs down the line, and we also secure our place in the global economy. So we really appreciate you having this hearing and your consideration of this resolution.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any questions of Michelle? Senator Thomas?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Similar kind of questions I asked before. Did you find that working with the many private partners that you had, private industry type folks, private business, that their belief was that the early education aspect available in a community was helpful in their recruiting and retaining employees?
Yes, Senator. Through the chair, in our conversations with we conduct workplace campaigns in many, many different work environments, and in our discussions there, what we found is that as people become more and more aware of this brain research and these early learning opportunities and our window to make a difference, they are finding that this is the key to the next generation workforce. They also expressed to us strong interest in having this array of services because it provides better productivity for their current workforce, so parents are not distracted by continually having to find one opportunity after another for their child. So we are seeing increasing support from the private sector, both in the content of what we're doing, but also their willingness to invest in it and put their dollars into a strong early learning system with measurable outcomes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other people signed up to testify? Anybody in the audience? Okay, well, I'd like for someone to put this on record so we can act upon this resolution, please.
Madam Chairman, I would move that we adopt Senate Concurrent Resolution 19. Mm-hmm. As a working document, or what?
As a working document.
A working document will be sufficient.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Yes.
There's
just a minute, please.
Sponsors.
Just a minute. It is a sponsor substitute. Yes. Sponsor substitute.
Sponsor substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 19. Yes.
Yes. Virgin E. Any objections to accepting this? It is before us, and before we take any action on it, would you like to close out with any remarks?
No, Madam Chair.
All right. So, well, thank you, Senator Wilikowski, for bringing this forward. It's quite important for us to keep this on our agenda because we are not now just one of the 10 states. We are one of the 3 states that do not have early childhood education legislation before us at this time. I'd like to hear from the committee if you have any comments to make or statements to make. And if not, I would like to have this moved out of my committee.
Madam Chairman, I move that sponsor substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 19 version /E be moved from the committee with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection to that? Hear no objections. This resolution would be moved to rules.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
We have one other bill to come before us. Senate Bill 107, you've heard before. We'll call up my aide to give an overview of where we are and what we have done. That's different from the last time that you saw this bill. Mr. Overmeyer, would you state your name for the record and begin your testimony?
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and members of the board, of the committee. I'm Tom Overmeyer, aide to Senator Betty Davis. The bill before you today is a committee substitute for Senate Bill 107. We call it the K version. 25LS0702K. It's an act relating to naturopaths and to naturopathic practice, establishing an Alaska Naturopathic Council, amending the duties of the Board of Pharmacy relating to naturopathic practice, and providing for an effective date. An explanation for the CS before you from the previous committee hearing on the 13th of February is that the chair concluded that changes were required in oversight, training, and experience in order to expand naturopathic practice into areas, for the most part, that formerly had been reserved to allopathic MDs and DOs, that is, minor surgery, prescribing prescription drugs, and ordering medical laboratory tests and imaging. Changes in the CS include, one, the Alaska Naturopathic Council has increased from 5 to 7 members, including 3 naturopaths, 1 medical doctor, 1 pharmacist, and 2 members of the public who have no direct financial interest in naturopathic practice or the healthcare industry. Second is, the members of the Alaska Naturopathic Council are to be appointed by the governor, that is, to be established through the boards and commissions in the governor's office, not the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Naturopaths also must have practiced 5 years before being allowed the expanded scope of practice in minor surgery, prescribing drugs, and ordering medical laboratory tests. Naturopaths are required and licensed to prescribe, who are licensed and may prescribe drugs, must take 15 contact hours of pharmacy education training each year. Naturopaths who are to perform minor surgery must have first received a minimum of 1,200 clinical hours of training under the supervision of medical doctors, physician's assistants, and nurse practitioners. Now, in looking at the bill, essentially advisory council has no power to adopt regulations as a board under the boards and commissions, but it may advise the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development as to how to regulate. I would also note that that there's no attempt here to change, I mean, to recognize what other states have done, because I have spent extensive amounts of time looking at states, and every state has a different way of dealing with this particular set of practices. I have spent a whole weekend looking at state statutes, but I find that much of the regulations are in state regulations as well as state statutes. So the while many states will require that naturopaths, if they have expanded practice, come under the medical board, the state medical board, there are probably others that don't, because they don't have the full reach of the practice. It's been explained that the most that the states with the most expanded practices are in Oregon and in Arizona and the state of Washington, with hundreds of naturopaths. Kansas has not, they don't call it licensing, but they call it regulation in 2003. And they're under the state medical board, although they don't have surgery privileges, but some prescribing privileges. So every state's a little different. And the legislature here has to decide how it best wants to regulate the practice of naturopathy.
Is that the end of your statement for now?
If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
What I want you to do before I take testimony or ask for any questions is to go back over the things that we have agreed that we would change. And I want you to state each one of those things that's in the new bill, the new CS.
Well, again, we increased the council from 5 to 7 members. That was the first change. And it included 3 naturopaths, a medical doctor, and a pharmacist, each appointed by their respective boards, but then a recommendation to the governor for final appointment. It might seem unnecessary to go through the second step if the governor's doing the appointment anyway, but it's felt that the boards of the respective pharmacy and medical boards would best know the people that they feel would be most responsible in this particular position. Also, again, members of the Naturopathic Council, I mentioned that they're appointed by the governor. The naturopath must have practiced 5 years before allowing the expanded scope of practice that I described in surgery and prescribing drugs and laboratory testing and imaging. Naturopaths must be who are qualified in prescriptions must take 15 contact hours of pharmacy education training each year, and they also have to be pre-qualified to do all of this, as explained in the bill, with 60 hours of training and have to have met requirements in the state and perhaps federal qualifications as well. And then finally, clinical training under supervision of medical doctors, physicians, assistants, or nurse practitioners, where it's felt that these people are already trained in minor surgery procedures and in anesthetics as well, so that they may, that they will be fully qualified when they're operating independently to do this. This, unlike some other states, this bill does not state that they must work under a cooperative agreement with a doctor or under a doctor. They're presumably operate independently here.
And the effective date of this bill?
Yes, the effective date of the bill, as indicated in section 13 on page 8, the very last section, is to take effect July 1, 2009.
And those are the things that we discussed, and I have brought forward all those. We will take public testimony, but before we do that, I want to find out from us if we, and we first need to accept the new CS that we have in front of us. It is different from the last one.
Madam Chairman, I move that we adopt as a working document CS for Senate Bill number 107/K.
Yes. Any objections? Hearing none, it is before us. We do have people signed up to testify. Are there any questions before? Yes.
Thank
Senator Elton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and probably of Mr. Obermeyer, but those who testify later may want to weigh in also. And just clarification for me so that I make sure I understand the council. It provides that when appointing pharmacists and physicians, the governor may appoint a pharmacist from the list of names submitted by the Board of Pharmacy and a physician from the list of names submitted by the State Medical Board. But there is no provision for the governor to request a list from the naturopaths. I mean, why is the appointment of a doctor or a pharmacist different than the appointment of a naturopath?
As far as the coming from their own boards, it's because they have their own boards at this time. The naturopaths don't, through the chair of Senator Elton. Those boards are already dealing with registration of and licensing of their people, with discipline and education, and it was felt that though that the boards themselves would be better qualified to make recommendations than just a guess as to who might be best suited to do this. And I suspect that a great number of people could be selected by either one of those boards. It probably gets down to who is willing to take the time to deal with it more than anything, because they're all busy people.
And then, Madam Chair, just one other question.
Yeah.
about the duties of the council and the selection of the council. I mean, it says the a quorum of the council shall be four members, or at least four members, for the transaction of business, which essentially I think means that one of the most important first chores and subsequent chores of the naturopathic council is establishing and maintaining a list of prescription drugs and medical devices consistent with, and to review the list of prescription drugs and medical devices. But that could happen without, I mean, the maintenance of a list or the creation of a list could happen without a pharmacist present. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, I presume you're right, although I doubt that they would take action without the advice of the pharmacy board or the pharmacist who is responsible on it. I will note that even in Kansas, they have two medical doctors on a formulary council and one on an advisory council. So they and they're under the state medical board. So they are trying to keep these professionals totally involved in the naturopathic practice. And I think you're right. It is a question, but I don't think from a responsible viewpoint there would be an attempt to try to change the formulary without the advice or consent. And it's an issue, though, as to when and how they do this. But my understanding from reading the other states is they usually, the very first thing they usually do is work on the formulary console and the drugs that would be allowed to be prescribed or whatever herbs or whatever. There's a whole list of things, including vitamins and so forth, that are usually on the list, and it probably won't change that much once it's established. But there are changes in drugs and so forth, and I assume that they're going to involve the appropriate people to deal with it.
Thank you. One last question, Madam Chair.
Before you go to your next question, I just want to add that with the effective date on here, they have that 1 year to work out those differences, and that's why the bill was moved from 08 to go into effect in July 08 to July 09. So they have 1 year to formulate all those things and get them filed back so they can go on and start getting the rest of the people that are interested in the extension of their duties.
Okay.
Some might not even want to perform any more than what they're already doing, and that would be their choice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad you pointed that out. The last question I have for now, Madam Chair, is on page 5, beginning on line 5, where it's the new section 5, or I think it's a new section 5.
Line 5.
And what we have, I mean, structurally, what we have is a council appointed by the governor. The council has specific responsibilities that were delineated earlier in the bill. But the department sets the fees. I mean, why would you have the department set the fees instead of the council? I mean, it seems to me the only duty of the department here is to set the fees.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, that's what makes this an advisory board. I think there may be confusion as to the fact that this is an advisory body. It's not like the state medical board or the state pharmacy board, which has regulatory powers. And this advisory board still falls under the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, and it would be the responsibility of that department as well to sanction and discipline if there are problems and that type of thing, as they do now in that particular department. Now, the connection between commerce and health are very close in this case, and that's the reason so many states have thrown this under the umbrella of the state medical boards. But in this case, it remains an independent advisory committee or council, in part because they'd already gone that way. I think this discussion has been had several times where it was suggested that they may have a board, and it was decided it would be too expensive and too cumbersome for the few numbers of people in this state. It turns out that that Kansas, for example, in 2003 only had 21 naturopaths they were dealing with, and they have 27 pages of licensing requirements, but and 6,500 physicians. But this is a more informal and flexible structure than if they had a formal board.
Madam Chair.
I do have Mr. Bullock on the line, and if you would like for him to address that question, I'd be glad for him to do that.
Madam Chair, that might be good, and given the response of Mr. Obermeyer, maybe I would have an addendum to ask Mr. Bullard.
Okay. Mr. Bullard, are you there?
Yes. Yes, Senator.
Have you heard the conversation?
I'm sorry. I've only heard the last portion. What was...
I'll let him ask the question over again, and then maybe you could address that.
Mr. Bullard, the question I had asked is, the council is appointed by the governor, and has some specific duties that were delineated in Section 4, but the department sets the fees for the council. So I guess that's the first part of the question. And then given Mr. Obermeyer's response, I mean, he characterized the council as advisory in nature. Which leads to the second part of the question, and that's under the duties of the council. It says the council shall establish a list of prescription drugs and medical devices that the department may approve. So I'm struggling with the notion of how advisory it is. I mean, if they shall do the list, does that mean that list is only advisory and the department can amend the list or add to the list things that take off the list what the council wants and add things the council didn't want?
Senator L, through the chair. The council, as Mr. Obermeyer has indicated, is completely advisory. The may in that paragraph dealing with the establishment of a list of prescription drugs, the department itself would enjoy the end authority to add, subtract, or delineate what drugs would be on that list.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bullard. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm kind of struggling with the notion of if the department has the final say on everything, why are we establishing a council, I guess? I may be able to get there. I'm just...
At one point, I would say this. I thought that because we were trying to put it up under the governor's office, that it would no longer be up under the Department of Commerce. But I hear him saying that it is still under Commerce. Is that correct, Mr. Bullock?
It is. It
and what would we have to do to take it off under the offices of the Department of Commerce and put it in the same categories we do with the governor's appointments?
Senator, then you would be creating, most likely, the form could vary, you would be creating a state board or commission with members appointed by the governor. Since it is purely advisory right now, that is why it's in the department. So to advise the department and how they license and regulate naturopathy.
So why are we having the governor appoint part of them and still leaving it under the Department of Commerce?
Senator, that was a drafting request. There is no necessity that it ought to read in that manner or operate in that manner.
Would it work smoothly by just having all the appointments to come from one entity rather than having two people doing it, two groups?
Smoothly is in the eye of the beholder. It's not unusual with these advisory boards or councils to have the commissioner themselves appoint the members of those councils, since the board or commissioner or council in this case doesn't really enjoy any regulatory authority.
Okay, thank you. Senator Elton, you said you had an addendum you'd like to add, or you want to do that after the testimony?
No, Madam Chair, the addendum was, how, I mean, what the role was of the council on establishing the list and what the department's role was on whether or not they could accept the list. I guess just a comment before we get testimony from others. I'm somewhat struggling I'm going to sound like my counterpart across the room from me here. I'm somewhat struggling with the notion of adding a council that has no authorities, or whose authorities can be trumped by the department. And I sometimes am susceptible to the arguments made by my colleague from Eagle River that instead of adding advisory groups, we may want to subtract advisory groups if they have no real power. So I may get beyond that, and I'll wait until I hear the rest of the testimony.
All right, thank you. Any other questions at this time? Now we'll go to the public testimony, and we have John Raster. Are you here in the audience?
I am here.
Thank you, Senator Davis.
You're welcome.
I am John Raster, and I have spoken before, and I'm representing the Alaska State Medical Association. And although we appreciate the changes that have happened with this substitute, the Alaska State Medical Association still feels that it is potentially somewhat unregulated in that the Naturopathic Council could potentially allow all drugs to be in the formulary. And that would include narcotics, OxyContin, Schedule II drugs, or chemotherapy. And I don't see the oversight necessarily where the Department of Commerce apparently has that oversight, but I don't know that they have a physician on their staff or a pharmacist on their staff that would be able to sign off on those drugs. So essentially it would be the Naturopathic Council that would decide the formulary. That coupled with the surgery, in-office surgery, I did notice that it said superficial surgery, minor surgery, page 3, line 2, using operative methods. And then further down it says, does not include surgery involving tendons, ligaments, nerves, or blood vessels. But you know, you go 1 millimeter under the skin and there are nerves. And so with the medications that could potentially be prescribed along with the surgery, this would make Alaska the most would give naturopaths the most broad spectrum of prescribing and surgery ability in the country. So I'm not sure that Alaska would put us in that category. The other question is then, what if there's a complaint by a patient? Right now, you know, if a patient has an adverse outcome, they could complain to the state medical board. But I'm not sure, according to the Senate bill, where they would make that complaint, because I don't know that the Naturopathic Council would be able to deal with the complaint. Perhaps it would go through Senate Commerce. So, in essence, the bill looks essentially the same, and we just have some misgivings about that.
I hear what you're saying, and I'm going to take Senator Elson's question, but I think, and you've testified on this bill before, and you know where we're trying to go with this bill, I don't agree with some of the statements that you made, because there are other states that's already letting a naturopath doctor do the things that they are attempting to do in this state. We know that for a fact. The other part is, if you have an objection to them moving forward, I would like for you to be able to come forward and say that you could be a help rather than just say, no, I don't want them to do this. Try to help me get where we're trying to get. It seems there must be some doctor out there that would agree with that concept. You say you're speaking for the board. I have no problem with that. But over and over, we've asked for your help, and I have yet to get any help from you. Your board saying, if you try this or do this, maybe that would work, and we'll be willing to be a member of the board. That's why I put one MD on there. thinking that they would be able to find at least one that would want to work with these people to get where they want to get. Maybe you're not going to be the one, but maybe there might be one of you that might want to do that. And if you have some suggestions on what we need to do or what you think we should do, I'd like for you to provide that to me rather than keep saying we don't want them to go there.
I will definitely take that. But we're having a board meeting tomorrow morning, as a matter of fact, and I will I'll mention that to our board of trustees and then come up with some suggestions.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And I think Senator Elton has a question.
Well, Dr. Rester, I appreciate your testimony. There are two things that may give you some sense of comfort. My understanding of the previous testimony by Dr. Bullard and by Mr. Obermeyer is that, in fact, the council can't do the formulary.
No, they
I mean, what they the that power is reserved to the department, who may approve, not shall approve, the list that is done. And then on the same page, on the, at the bottom of the line, I'm on page four. The first line three is where it says the department may approve, not shall approve. What the council has done. And then line 31, an endorsement issued under A of this section is valid for 2 years unless revoked or suspended by the department. So that seems to give the department the ability to suspend the privilege of doing minor surgery or prescribing drugs. So that seems to me to be, to get to the issue that you have or the concern that you have, that there is no consequences if you've done something wrong. So I just wanted to point that out.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Irma Nortland.
I have a very strong hearing deficiency, so please bear with me. My hearing aids are not doing the job.
Okay, would you just pull your microphone up and you can give your testimony, state your name for the record?
Irma Norland. And I'm here to express my support for the Senate Bill 107. My primary provider is a medical provider, currently is a naturopathic doctor, Dr. Emily Kane. And it would be helpful to me for naturopathic doctors to be empowered to use all the skills that they were trained for, including the ability to prescribe medication and perform minor surgery. For these things, I must currently contact an MD. General practitioners are not readily available, and this means a trip to the emergency room, which costs additional money and time, not only for me, but also for the medical insurance industry. And I visited my son in 2006, and I was traveling with a life-threatening blood clot, a DVT. And Dr. Kane correctly diagnosed it as a deep vein thrombosis of a blood clot and recommended the proper treatment. Even though his attentions were good, dealing with the MD at the emergency room in Juneau nearly forced me to travel without proper medication to thin my blood. It was through the exceptional efforts of Dr. Kane that I was able to obtain the medication, proper medication, in time. To date, Dr. Kane is the only physician that has attempted to actually reduce the clot, not just thin my blood. I'm now retired, obviously. And I was a registered nurse for over 30 years. And it's my opinion that naturopathic medicine is not only legitimate, but far preferable in conventional treatments. And I'm now being treated by Dr. Kane for hypertension. And I may require medication, and that would be very costly for me, inconvenient for me, and would be preferable if she could prescribe the medication for me. That's all I have.
Does that complete your testimony?
Yes, ma'am.
We thank you so much for your testimony. Is there any questions or comments to be made to Mrs. Nortland? If not, we thank you for your testimony. We also have Scott Luber. Are you online? Scott Luber?
Yes, Madam Chair, this is Dr. Scott Luber. Can you
okay.
hear me?
Yes, I do.
I want to say that I'm speaking in support of Senate Bill 107. I'm a naturopathic physician who practices in Fairbanks. And I'm also the president of the Naturopathic State Association. And I appreciate the testimony that we've heard this evening. And I really want to be available for questions more than anything else. But I do want to speak to the essence of this bill. And what it does is it allows naturopathic physicians to practice as they are educated. Naturopathic physicians come into the education after 4 years of college. They do additional 4 years of medical education. And they get tested. They sit for national boards to test their competence in a wide variety of areas, including minor surgery and the use of pharmaceuticals. The fact of the matter is most states that license naturopathic doctors do allow some degree of prescription rights, and Alaska is one of the places that don't. In any case, what I really want to do is I want to be able to provide the care to my patients that I have been trained to provide. Now, I do have one story to say, just a quick story here, which is just to illustrate the frustrations that I experienced personally. This week I saw a woman, 43-year-old woman with three kids, and she came complaining of tiredness, of fatigue. She's also had menstrual problems, she's had headaches, and she said the kind of things that are difficult for a doctor to really get a grasp on, you know, because it's kind of a vague situation. Anyway, I performed a number of tests, physical exams, history, and what came of this was the diagnosis of hypothyroidism. Her thyroid wasn't producing enough hormone. It's a very straightforward thing to take care of. What you do is you put the patient on thyroid hormone. Unfortunately, I had to refer. So she had to endure the added expense and trouble and time and delay in getting the care that she needed because of the way the loss is in Alaska right now. So in any case, it's this experience that really drives this process, because the fact of the matter is we want to be able to provide quality care, the care that we're trained to be able to provide to patients. And that's all I have to say. I mean, I could go on and on and on, of course, but I really want to be available here to answer any questions as well. I could enlighten the committee on the history of why we came to the advisory council, for example, if there's some interest in that, or other areas. Naturopathic education, those kinds of things.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions? Senator Thomas?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Dr. Luber, you know, there's been testimony in the past that, some of the differences along the educational path are in particular the residency that is served by an MD that has to serve at least a certain period of time in a hospital under training and therefore develops a lot more practice and procedure with some of the situations that you all will run into. Do you have an explanation as to why you think that's not necessarily valid, or am I incorrect in my understanding that the residency is not required or is required in your case of a naturopath?
Let me answer your question, starting by saying that I was in charge of the residency program at Southwest School of Naturopathic Medicine. And I do think that residencies are a good idea. I think it's a place where doctors get to hone their skills. It's unfortunate that the residency positions that are available to naturopathic physicians are not as many as the naturopathic physicians themselves. And the reason for this is because naturopathic medicine is not subsidized by the federal government. And that is the way it is with MDs and DOs. The federal government helps subsidize the residency program. Now that's a problem that we're doing our best to correct, but it does take time. It takes, you know, political experience, it takes political will to be able to bring those kinds of changes into medicine. Meanwhile, are being offered. I know I offer residency at my clinic now. We've had 5 residents. And it's something that is important to keep in mind, but the fact of the matter is when you get down to it, naturopathic doctors are trained well enough at the end of the 4 years because they have thousands of hours of patient contact while they're in school. And they are trained well enough to be able to diagnose, to be able to treat, to be able to prescribe, to be able to perform minor surgical procedures. They're all trained under the supervision of licensed doctors, including MDs and DOs in some cases. You know, the real question is, how can you make the education as good as possible? How can you train people as good as possible, given the resources that you have? And the fact of the matter is, that's what's being done in naturopathic medicine now. It's a young profession. Not necessarily young in spirit, because, you know, the treatments have been around as long as people have been around, you know, from prehistory in some cases. But the profession itself is fairly young. So it's taken a while for those residency programs to develop. That work is being done now. It's expanding as we speak, but there still is a gap between the numbers of people who are graduated from naturopathic colleges and the residencies that are available.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have one more person to testify. That's Emily King. Kane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I wasn't signed up to testify, but I did want to, if I could, make one point that might alleviate Dr. Raster's mind and his board.
Okay.
My understanding was that one version of this bill specifically excluded narcotics and chemotherapy from the potential list of legend drugs. I'm personally certainly not interested in narcotics or in chemotherapeutics, and I would guess that I'm speaking for most naturopaths there. So am I incorrect, Tom? Was there never a... I seem to remember that those two categories specifically were excluded.
And it's still in the bill that way.
Oh.
I'd let Mr. Bullock speak to that, because that's not anything that we asked to be changed in the bill.
So why was Dr. Raster concerned about those categories?
I don't understand your question. What did you say?
Oh, my understanding was that the narcotics and chemotherapeutics were never under discussion to...
They were not. The doctor that spoke today mentioned those things, but that was not what we had in the bill.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam
You're
Chair.
Welcome. Is somebody back there want to speak?
Well, I'm Dr. Raster. I remember reading it.
Hi, sorry, Dr. Raster again. I remember reading that in another bill as well, but I can't find it in this bill where it specifically says either chemotherapy or Schedule II drugs are prohibited. According to the, it says that the naturopathic prescription endorsement, page 4, line 15 is the paragraph, and then line 27, an endorsement issued under this section authorizes the licensee to administer prescription drugs that are on formulary approved by the council. I don't see where the council is limited.
I'm not, if I may, I'm not sure if this would cover it, and I think Bullard is still on the line. But I do see on page 2 that except as authorized under 08-45-056, and I'm not sure what that says, prescription drugs, controlled substances, and poisons, which I don't know if you actually classify a chemotherapy as poison. I heard it was rat poison, but I've never had anybody of authority tell me that's exactly what it is, but I'm not sure if that's where the restriction is or not.
Mr. Bullock, are you still online?
I am.
Could you speak to that?
Right now, those are not in the bill. I don't have all copies of the previous drafts of the bill immediately to hand, but I can investigate and find if those were there.
You spoke to page 2 where it also states what they can do. And I do know that when we gave the testimony before, we had that in there, and I did not ask that it come out. So I'm lost here. I think we're running out of time. I don't have anybody else to testify on this bill, but apparently it is not in the shape that we wanted to do, because I need to go back to the original bill where it did state legend drugs in there, but it's my understanding that that part was never to come out of this draft, and you are the one that did prepare this.
Senator, I'm looking at the most original version of this draft.
Yes.
Now the A version. I don't see it there either.
The what version?
A draft. 25-0702A.
Well, how did it get out of there, though? I'm in loss. Yes, Tom?
Senator Davis, I believe that it was correctly pointed out in on page 2 that section 845.050 has not changed except as in the new section, which is 056. This, the current restrictions are against, it says there, see, it's not in highlighted, prescription drugs, controlled substances, which would be, I think, the narcotics that have been discussed in the past. I don't think chemotherapy had ever come up in the discussion of this. I think that if this thing goes to a council where they are selecting drugs, this would be one of the first things that comes up as to, you know, what can be and what cannot be prescribed. And if it is determined that ultimately that this has to fall, that this should fall under, for example, the state medical board, then the law would have to be changed to require that the state medical board regulate this profession, as in so many other states.
All right, thank you. Senator Elton.
Madam Chair, not to add to the confusion, but as Mr. Bullard works on this, are you still there, Mr. Bullard?
Through the chair, I am.
A question that I have, again, back on page 4 of version K. I wonder if this isn't an anomaly. I'm looking at line 3, and then I'm looking at line 29. Line 3 provides that the council creates a list that the department may approve for use by naturopaths. And then down beginning on line 27, it says an endorsement issued under A of this section authorizes the licensee to prescribe and administer prescription drugs and medical devices that are on the formulary approved by the Alaska Naturopathic Council. Shouldn't that be formulary approved by the department? Because it could be two different lists.
I believe that is correct, Senator.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I'm closing public testimony on this bill at this time, and there is corrections or expansion of the bill, so we're just going to close the public hearings unless there's some comments to be made by the people that are present. I mean members of the committee. Because there's more work to be done on this. And if you have nobody to make any comments at this time, I'm going to close public testimony and also adjourn at 5:30.